And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Going out to eat.
What are we doing?
Aubrey.
We're a family. We're going out to eat.
Going out to eat.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dogs Podcast.
Love it.
The Athletic Network. That's one of my favorites. I don't know why. I was not expecting that. We're going out to eat. It's Monday, May 9th. Here we are in the Classic Factory. I'm giggling away. I'm J.E. Skeets alongside me. As always, we got Tass Mellis.
Question is, did they post it like that? Was that the original, or did someone cut it up?
I don't know.
They just wanted to see it that way. I think it was the original.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Right? Yeah.
We got the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis. And last, certainly not least, super producer, finding those beautiful cold opens, JD.
I love that family so much.
What do you mean? Who are they?
No idea. I find them so charming. It's just like, and Tass, that's the original. That's as it was posted.
Yeah.
It's just great stuff. They're just going out to eat. And they just want to TikTok about it. I love it.
Can you guys please replicate that with your families? You guys got the perfect number sized family.
I mean, I definitely thought about me last night. That's what we did. We went out to eat. Yeah. We were super pumped about it. We love going out to eat. So, yeah. I mean, I think we had that same conversation in our car. Not as charming as those four, but yeah. We didn't get anything from the baby in the car.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Baby dropped
the
ball.
Well, neither did they, to be fair.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay, no Trey today here. He's actually helping out his kids with their field day, I guess it's called. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, field trip, field day, yeah.
Those are two different things.
Yeah, they totally different.
Things. Field trip.
He's on the grass.
Jumping
today.
On the bus, going somewhere. Field day to me, isn't it? Like a sport event?
Yeah.
Like,
hey, let's do the three-legged race.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Field on the field, at the school, it's field day.
And that's the one he's doing?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever have field day in Australia?
Yeah.
What was your best event as a young child?
Probably the sprint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were quick, were you?
Yeah, yeah. There was one guy, though, who was way quicker. And he was so quick, he ran in jeans. He didn't even take his jeans off. Lamb, he set the record, too. Our friend, Tinny, he was so fast. I remember him winning, setting a record.
What's
jeans and a jacket. Tin.
Tinny, you call
Tinny,
him.
Tin Lamb, yeah. Like lightning, he was. It really upset the PE teacher, too, because it's like you got some kids in like proper shorts and running shoes, and that Lamb is just like bolting down.
Yeah,
like, they can't
it's like
get
you
near
can't
it,
say
so.
Anything, dude. Nah, it's like nah, exactly. Kicking everybody's ass in jeans.
Nah, nah. And a new school record, Tin Lamb.
Shout out to Tinny.
Yeah.
Shout out to the stream team, too. This one's already off the rails. I got the giggles today. Thanks to everybody joining us live on YouTube. Subscribe, like, comment, share the show. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. We're going to get into all of these series. Remember when on Friday we were saying, hey, I wonder if any of these series will still be going come Monday. Oh, boy. Now we got pivotal games to talk about. But first, this morning, Woj dropped the Woj bomb. Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic has been voted the NBA's most valuable player for a second consecutive season, sources tell ESPN. A formal announcement is expected this week. So here you go, Lele.
Yeah.
Jokic gets it in the end. I felt like over the last week or so, there was like thoughts and more thoughts, I guess, that Embiid was maybe winning this thing because of maybe the timing of Jokic not getting the award. But in the end, it's going to him.
Yeah. That's the thing. You expect the guy to be here. And I think the NBA probably looked and said, the Nuggets might not be around for much longer. Let's get it out. But obviously, they chose not to do that.
Yeah.
But as far as Jokic winning it, I have certainly no problems with that. Giannis was my pick, and I believe Giannis is still, you know, a deserving MVP just as Jokic is. But the season he put in, considering the players that they were missing, he was incredible at night. And he continues to evolve his game and the game. And it's great to see him getting that recognition on a team, you know, that was always sort of struggling to sort of really get into contender area because they just didn't have the personnel. He was incredible. So congratulations to Jokic.
And Tastradamus calls it your preseason pick to win MVP.
Oh, yeah.
You went with Jokic back-to-back.
I forgot about that.
I went with Embiid, and obviously, I mean, we don't know the actual voting breakdown yet, but I assume it's going to be 1-2, but you got it right.
Jokic, his team had 48 wins, bounced in the first round. I think there'll be a little bit of a swing in the pendulum next year. The votes will go to a guy at the top of the standings because I think voters don't like a guy being bounced in the first round the way he was bounced. I went back, and it's not apples to apples, but when Dirk was bounced in six games in 2007 after winning it, it went to Kobe the next year, who was on top of the standings with the Lakers.
Okay.
With, I think they had 57 wins that year, so I could see that happening. Obviously, Jokic absolutely deserves it. The MVP, it's ridiculously funny, though, because the voting comes down to, you know, what a guy did, and Jokic would have loved to have done less, and his team would have been far better off if Jamal Murray was playing beside him, right?
Yeah.
His stats would have been worse. All the advanced stats would have been worse, and would he have gotten MVP? I don't know. Maybe not. It might have gone to somebody like Giannis, who is sort of, I guess, more universally panned as a better player, or, you know, has the finals MVP and those credentials anyways.
Yeah, he's already, that was what Giannis was up against this season, was like, you've won heaps, we know how good you are, you know, Jokic like is doing this on a team that's, you know, sort of doing better or succeeding largely because of him. And I think that does come into play for sure.
Yep.
But there's always a lot of guys with strong cases. Embiid was great, but he gets injured a little bit later and the Sixers sort of drop off, and, you know, it's like, just don't think he can do it. But he was runner-up last season, maybe runner-up again this season. Certainly,
he'll likely be runner-up.
Yeah, likely. Well, obviously at worst third, which is great for him.
Jokic was asked, I missed this clip going around, but I saw it this morning. He was asked after the Nuggets were eliminated how he would celebrate if he won a second MVP here. His answer was, quote, I don't know, probably with some music, beer, friends around, family, like how you're supposed to. I wish he said horses so bad there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. If he just added horses, music, beer, friends, family, and horses, maybe not even in that order, that would have been. But, yeah, he was, you know, playing it low-key, and I don't even know if he's here. We don't really know. I know he was at an Avalanche game, but is he still stateside?
Someone tweeted me and said that was from like last year or something.
Oh,
like
the
that.
Photo that you
showed?
So we can't even. So he might be gone. He might be with the horses.
Yeah. This could
be
a satellite. We haven't seen him on the horses either, so who knows where he is right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, centers in NBA history with multiple MVPs. Quick trivia?
Kareem.
Yep.
No, not Shaq. David.
No.
Wilt.
Wilt.
Tim Duncan.
No.
No one.
I don't think he's considered a center.
Yeah, well.
You got Wilt, Kareem. You're overthinking it with
Nash.
One.
Moses Malone.
Moses, nice.
Yeah.
And then one more.
Bill Russell.
There you go. And no, Jokic. Only five. Yeah, the Shaq part only having one is still pretty wild. So I wonder if, like, Heat fans, maybe to some extent Celtics fans, they're pissed off that the NBA waited until now to say, here you go, Jokic. You're going to win your second consecutive MVP because does that light a torch, a fire under, especially Embiid? I don't think Giannis really cares all that much. He's got a couple, but Embiid not having one, coming back, playing well in 3 and 4, we're going to get into that series and those games, but he's going to come out going crazy, I think, in Game 5 in Miami, is he not? He takes this stuff personally. We know Morey does, and I think Embiid does too.
We haven't seen an incredible game from him quite yet.
Yeah.
Here in Round 2, obviously the injuries have a huge part of it. Can he? Does he have that ability because he's battling so many things? I think the fact that what he's doing with the eye injury and the thumb injury is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into the games because there's a lot to talk about here this morning. We'll start with the Mavs lighting up the Suns from deep. Hit a whole bunch of three-pointers. They tie the series at 2 games apiece. Take both games here on the weekend, Taz.
Yeah.
Again, very surprising to me. really impressed with what Dallas did to set up a pivotal game five later this week.
Yeah, Sunday the Mavs were just scorching hot. They came out of the gate hitting three after three after three, 20 in all. They got eight from Dorian Finney-Smith.
The greatest Gord.
Yeah, very solid Gord. He makes the great Gord team. I didn't know where you were going with that.
I know you didn't.
But a solid tune and a solid guy on that team because he is a great Gord. Great value for that contract they just signed for Dorian Finney-Smith. Eight threes. They've got that for a second time now in the playoffs. They had Maxi Kleba, another guy, with eight threes. That's a lot of threes in the postseason to hit. Davis Bertans joined him with four. It wasn't Luka in this game. He was one of 10 from three. So they came out. They were just stroking it. They're firing away. Maybe it's because they've had daytime games here in the postseason. They're ready, and the Suns weren't ready. they've got that time slot. They're just prepared for it. I will say, though, on the other side, Chris Paul messed up. I think Chris Paul took himself out of this game here in game four with the foul trouble, and that changed his aggressiveness on the offensive end and on the defensive end. And, you know, he's got to get the credit when he's great, as we have given it to him earlier in the season, but I think he's got to get some blame here because from the get-go, from the first defensive possession, he just screwed up. And Monty Williams screwed up as well. And what happened was Chris Paul got some of his own medicine. he was goading guys. And I know it's easy for us to say, there's a bunch of fouls out there, but it's fun to just go through them because I want to be clear. I want to prove that these fouls were messed up and that he messed up, really, because he only took four shots in the first half, ended up with 5 points in 23 minutes, and I think he kind of did it to himself. So I want to go through them real quick. First defensive possession of the game, he was on his own baseline. Dorian Finney-Smith was going up for an alley-oop. Chris Paul didn't jump with him. He just put two hands on his back and shoved him. It was an easy call. It was a mistake. And I know there's lots of talk about the referees and them making mistakes, but I think they were pretty on point with Chris Paul. And then a few minutes later in the first quarter for his second foul, he was driving, if you remember, and he was passing off because he wasn't being aggressive, because I'm sure he didn't want to commit an offensive foul. And he just flailed his hands after passing the ball. It was a real Chris Paul thing to do. Hit Luka in the face, and Luka gave him his own medicine and flopped and sold it.
Yeah.
And there's two fouls right there, and then a minute and a half left in the first half. He was guarding Luka in the post instead of just taking a charge. He kind of, you know, pulled the chair like some of those centers have done in the past and pulled Luka down. And he didn't have to do that. So that was his third foul. And what was really crazy, minute 30 left. They pull him out. Three fouls at half. Okay, that would be fine. Yeah. But he was reinserted with 45 seconds left. That was really weird by Monty Williams. There wasn't a reason to do it. And so this was a bad call by the referees. But with 1 second left in the first half, he went for his own board on a miss. And they gave him his fourth foul. And obviously, huge swing going into the half. Four fouls versus three fouls. So why in the third quarter does he come out and he does the classic Chris Paul when he's bringing the ball up? The rule change was made for this guy, was made for Chris Paul not to stick his ass out in the backcourt. And he induced Jalen Brunson to get on his back. I mean, Chris Paul could have just dribbled up the floor, but instead he puts his butt into Jalen Brunson, and that's the fifth foul because of the rule change. Sixth foul was not a good call. But anyways, it's just some weirdness. I don't understand why Chris Paul did all that. It didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I think he could have played it a lot smarter. And the Mavs won this game by shooting, but also because Luka, you know, the pull the chair move, the flailing hands move, did a little to Chris Paul what Chris Paul does to other guys. And so I think he did it to himself a bit. In this game.
Some questionable calls, I think, like you went through them, but some silly risks on Chris Paul's part, right? I mean, that's what he did. Like, Tass took us through those brilliantly. Yeah. It's basically four of the six. We're like, all right, Chris. I mean, you got God on this one.
That's the thing. Like, you can't complain then about that sixth foul when you're making dumb moves to get those other ones that you're accumulating, and you get one. And sure, you get a bad one. Like, we're not here to say that every foul call is right, but to put this on the refs is wrong as well. This was on Chris Paul. This was a bad weekend for him. He had nine turnovers and 10 fouls and only 11 assists for the both games, which is funny because we know how incredibly good he is with the ball, taking care of it, making the right play and taking the right shot and setting up his teammates. But he couldn't sort of get out of that flow from Friday night and then yesterday. Very, like, just rookie type of mistakes that someone like him, that, you know, they were looking at him to sort of win this game, lead them to get to be able to go home and close this series out, and he couldn't do that. So I don't have any complaints, even if there is one or two that are questionable calls because he put himself in that position. And I also think that just takes away somewhat of just how good Dallas was without Luka Doncic. They were 19 for 34, not including Luka Doncic, as 1 for 10 from downtown, which is just incredible. And when you get those guys hitting their shots, this is what we talk about all season with the Mavericks, is like, if those guys are off, feels like Dallas loses every game. But when they're on like this, even when the Suns made those little pushes, it just felt like it was either a Finney Smith, Bertans just hitting.
Oh, my God. He's back, baby.
I mean, wow. He is so feast or famine. I mean, 12 points, one rebound, 4 of 6. That's all he did, was go out there and give you 4 3-pointers. That was great. Dinwiddie hit a couple as well. Didn't play all that well outside of that. But this is the way the Mavericks are going to just try to beat you, is like, we can just try to spread the floor out, get the ball moving around. And that ball was zipping around yesterday beautifully. And I think it's just so important that Luka, he had the 11 assists, so I thought was really good, but they're not relying on him, as we saw in the first game, where he had, I think, 45 in that first game, and they lose comfortably. So everyone else contributes here. This is a fantastic weekend for Dallas, because I remember on Friday we were kind of like, hope this series isn't over by the time we come into the office on Monday. Instead, it's absolutely alive here, and the Suns have got a few things to sort out. The Ayton stuff, I think, as well. I'm sort of surprised they're not really just force-feeding Ayton inside. I think that's really what they should be doing here. But instead, Dallas has probably got, like, we can beat these guys, just got to make sure everyone's hitting these threes.
Yeah, I saw Mike Prada on Twitter, who just joined the Athletic Network. Welcome to the team, Mike. Pointing out, like, it turns out Dallas's five out is tough for any team to guard, maybe not just the Utah Jazz, because over these last two games, that five-out system, I mean, look, it helps when these guys are splashing threes, but these are, you know, caught in rhythm, fairly open, because what's happening to me, I've seen in these last two, is like, the Suns' perimeter defensive guys, who are pretty good across the board, they're doing a bad job of staying in front of their guys. Those guys are getting into the paint, generally Luka or Brunson, and then just kick into corners, and because the guys are getting in there, the help comes, but the help is like almost overhelping in a way, because then those shots are open and these guys are just in rhythm right now splashing them. It's like they're caught in between both, like, either somebody stay in front of your damn man so I don't have to come and help, or, you know what, don't help so much, because you're doing more harm than you are good, because then you're just leaving wide open three-point shooters, who these guys, DFS and Dinwiddie and Kleba and Bertans, and, you know, these guys are just in a rhythm right now, at least in Dallas. Will it translate in Phoenix is the question.
Totally. I hate to put it all on Chris Paul, but I think he sort of lacked the aggression on the defensive end too. He was floating a little bit because he was in foul trouble a little bit. And listen, this is a special performance by Dorian Finney-Smith. He was the leader in the clubhouse with those 8 threes by far, and he has the ultra green light, and he felt incredibly good, obviously. 8 threes in a playoff game, that ain't easy to do. Those are big numbers. The guys who've had 9 or more are, most of them are current players. Most of them are great, great, great shooters. And they take a lot of them. And then to have 2 performances throughout this postseason here, with Kleba early in the playoffs, it was game 2 against the Jazz. That was without Luka, which was really, really impressive. And now Dorian Finney-Smith, who was just firing away. Yeah, the Mavs just came out ready and had a 68-point first half. And the Suns... Suns just can't do that. They slowed down in the second half. The Mavs did. Mm-hmm. And the Suns, I just feel like they kind of punted this one from the get-go. They messed up from the get-go. And the Mavs obviously were absolutely ready to do that in the first quarter.
Do you agree with Lee that it should be maybe force the ball into Ayton a little bit more and try and like beat up these guys, the smaller Mavs team inside? Is that going to work? Because look, I don't see Dallas changing anything here.
Nah.
I think they're like, can we do this 2 more times?
Yeah.
Out of 3 games, you know, obviously get into the paint and kick out to all of our guys and just spread the floor like that. And maybe Luka even has like, I mean, he's probably not going to go 1 for 10 from 3 again either. It'll be 3 or 4 that he'll hit out of his 9 or 10 attempts. Is that the Suns' counter? I mean, obviously, stay out of foul trouble. Chris Paul's got to play in fourth quarters. I mean, those are obvious things, but is there anything else you see that they can do to, like, now this is a best-of-3 series?
It's hard to look at something else they can do, because they can't count on Mikal Bridges to have great offensive games when he's got to guard Luka for so many minutes. They don't want to count on Jay Crowder to do much more than shoot threes. I think that it was weird that they limited campaign's minutes, but I'm naming every single guy because Devin Booker did his job. Chris Paul didn't, and DeAndre Ayton, I mean, he really did his job. He just didn't have the capability or the ability to do more because he just didn't have the shot attempts. So, yes, yes and no. I mean, I think if Chris Paul plays better, I think what you're saying about the defense of the Suns has to be better. I think they may just say, Luka, fire away a little bit more than leaving those other shooters. It's incredible that this team gets only 26 from Luka and wins a playoff game. And that shouldn't happen. They shouldn't be leaving those other shooters. So they have to clean it up on the defensive end, and then I think their offense becomes a little bit crisper. But Ayton is an advantage for them, no doubt. They have to use him.
Something that happens at the end of this game, we got to address it. A Mavericks fan removed after an incident with Chris Paul's family, and you're starting to see clips of what maybe was happening or the aftermath of it. Obviously, Chris Paul is fired up. He took to Twitter. He basically, don't touch my family. He's, again, it appears to be somewhat of a kid or a teenager, right? I don't know.
You know,
seen people call the kid 14. I've seen people call the kid 18. Who knows? It's a teenager from what we can tell, and he gets, you know, he leaves with his family, and I guess rightfully so, especially if he touched Chris Paul's family, his mother and wife and stuff like that with his kids there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know you're getting old when you just can't tell if a kid's either 14 or 25.
I had no clue.
But if these accusations are true, that the guy was touching his family multiple times, then ban for life. Like, there's no, there's absolutely no part for that. I don't care if you're young or old because he must have been there with a parent or someone else. And that's just no-go territory. The games are passionate and emotional. Everyone wants their team to win and stuff like that. And if you've got those tickets close to the bench, you have to absolutely respect family members at all times. It's bad enough when you know that people get abuse shouted at them, but any physical contact is basically unforgivable for me. Now, we don't know. I don't know exactly what happened, but obviously Chris Paul was fired up. He was pissed off. He got fouled out. We saw him saying, I'll see you later or something like that to the kid.
And then, of course, tweeting too. Exactly, Chris Paul's not like firing
and
up.
And I think the
like
Mavs also responded by basically saying, you know, we're aware, we're investigating, things like that. So these things have to be taken with the utmost security for sure, and get rid of those fans. There is no way you can justify any of that sort of behavior.
Yeah. Anything to add to that?
Not really. I just noticed that it was happening behind the Suns bench, directly behind the Suns bench.
Yep.
And I guess they had co-mingled family with regular fans, I suppose, which I know it happens in some buildings in the playoffs, but most of the time they try and keep the families together. I don't know how a Mavs fan squeaked in there, like right behind the bench. So I just want to know the seating chart and what happened, because usually, you know, to protect the family from as much, you know, playoff vitriol as possible, you put them somewhere where they're kind of isolated, or, you know, have a row of fans, you have security around them. But the Mavs fan seemed like he had a seat right behind the bench.
Yeah.
And
well, I guess at a certain point, it's not going to be all Suns fans that are family and friends. At a certain point, it's going to become Mavericks fans in Dallas, and it feels like that's where it was, that line. But there's no barrier in between them.
Where were the Pauls? Where was Chris Paul's family?
I think they were like two rows back or one row back, and then this family, this kid, whatever, that reportedly touched them was exactly what you're saying, the next row behind them.
I thought he was even closer. I thought he was even right behind the bench, but
I mean, we'll see.
Obviously, no excuses.
No,
obviously.
Yeah, ridiculous. And I think you have to come down harshly so that other people know as well that that's the punishment if you do it.
Yeah.
Because obviously, we don't want to see a Malice in the Palace situation where things can quickly escalate. Again, when people are emotional and it's playoffs and you're trying to win, and that's when people can just lose their minds very, very quickly. So, anyway, I'm sure we'll find out in the next few days exactly what happened there, because there are cameras everywhere. Mark Cuban's got those cameras all around the arena, so they should be able to find out what happened.
All right, well, until we do, let's move on to James Harden and Joel Embiid powering the 76ers past the Heat there on Sunday, and they even their series at two games apiece. So, yes, we're into pivotal territory with Game 5s coming up later this week. We might have more pivotal Game 5s after tonight's games, for all we know. We could have four pivotal Game 5s. But anyway, no surprise that Embiid comes back and changes the course of this series. And thank God, because we remember at the end of last week going, this doesn't even feel like a playoff series. It feels games in January. Well, it changed when he came back, obviously in Game 3 and continuing Game 4. We got the mask and the beard. And I think the Sixers looked as good as they have at any point in this series and in a while here because of really Harden like pushing a bit of tempo, blending scoring with attacking and playmaking. And, you know, he had the step back threes going, finished with 31 points in game four and 16 in the fourth quarter. And the Heat were hanging around, trying to stay in this, trying to steal it. Butler doing his best. They don't have an answer for him, but Harden playing like that and Embiid coming out and setting the tone in game four after, you know, game three where he's out there and like that's inspirational and pull that off in front of their Philly crowd. And suddenly this is a series now for sure. And you could convince me either team wins.
Yes, I'd probably still lean towards Miami because they have home court advantage here. But Embiid, the good thing is for Philadelphia, he's only taken 25 shots in these two games. Yeah. It's not like it's like, okay, everything is going through him. And James Harden, maybe he's going Benjamin Button on us here. But he's starting to find his legs a little bit because last night was without question the best game I think I've seen him play for Philadelphia.
That's who they traded for.
Exactly.
The three-time scoring champ that can like dominate stretches of a game. Yes.
And he had the 9 assists there as well. He was looking fantastic. Got to the free throw line 10 times. Hit the 6 threes. And when they needed him, when Miami made that push in the fourth quarter, that was when he was like, this is what I'm going to have to take over. The step back threes and knocked him down. So that was incredible, I think, here for Philadelphia. And I think that just sort of energized the crowd as well. And Embiid's realizing, okay, I can do mine without having to be the only guy who can go out there and dominate my opponent. So this is a fantastic weekend here for Philadelphia because I think they also expose Miami's one weakness, which is their offense at times looks bad. It just looked, this is the thing, like Jimmy Butler going for 40 yesterday, he was great, but that's not a good sign, I don't think, for Miami. They're much better, and they went 7 for 35 from downtown. I mean, yeah, I agree with their expulsion after the game. I didn't think they were all bad shots. I thought they just, some of them just were clankers and they missed, but they don't want to have a guy carry the offensive workload like that. They prefer it when everyone is contributing, getting guys to knock down shots. Kyle Lowry is an interesting one. He went 0 for 6 from downtown, but why was he even on the court at times there? Like, he's coming off a hamstring injury, and it looked like he was hobbling around, dragging that foot around, which to me seemed like a huge risk. But he, I suppose he's a warrior, he wants to get out and play. I understand that. But man, what happens if he does more damage to that hamstring? You might lose him for as long as you're in the playoffs here. So this is great for Philadelphia. They have a way here of at least competing with Miami. They've got to now take that down to Miami and compete better down there. Now, obviously, Embiid wasn't there for the first two games, but they got to be feeling at least like they're back in this series and with a real chance.
Yeah, what'd you see from these two games, the Philly wins over the weekend?
Well, James Harden performed, and his action on the floor just opens things up for other guys. As you saw, this was his best game by far in the postseason.
Yep.
Yes, of course, this is what they traded for. They need him to be phenomenal if they have championship aspirations. It happened here late, but it's, game four. And Embiid said it after the game when they're sitting there. He was asked about it. Embiid said, yeah, this is the James Harden we want. We need, and you saw as all the focus was being on Harden and Embiid late in the game, everybody looking, all five sets of eyes looking at Harden as he handled the ball, threw off to Maxey, and then Maxey was able to find Tobias Harris because the focus was still on Embiid and Harden. Tobias Harris literally just creeped in from the corner for a huge alley-oop. You don't see an alley-oop a minute 30 left.
From that distance.
That was big. So that was a dagger alley-oop while the other two guys, because they're drawing so much attention and gravity, forced that to happen. On the Heat side, definitely a worry about Kyle Lowry with a team that struggles in the half court. Regardless of who's on the floor, because Lowry isn't really a creator, Tucker isn't really a creator, Strus needs things created for him, and Bam hasn't become that guy. So if Lowry's out there hobbling, holding his hamstring at times, and he was asked about it post game, he said you wouldn't want to play with this. I'm not sure why. Because he isn't just a guy who's needed to catch and shoot. He needs to do a little bit more. Everybody needs to do a little bit more. It's an offense by committee.
Yeah.
So that's worrisome. It kind of makes more sense to start Gabe Vincent and wait till Lowry is healthy. And obviously Tyler Hero needs to be a little bit better. Those are the guys that need to be great. It's Hero and Butler on this team. And Hero was not that guy. And maybe you run more plays for Strus. I thought he was super quiet in this game. And his offense is desperately needed playing alongside Tucker and a hobbled Lowry. So, go home. I think they find their offense a little bit more, but those guys need to step up a little bit more as well.
Look, I think I might be the biggest Kyle Lowry fan on the planet, but he should not be playing. He's doing more harm than good. And I don't know if he's even going to play in Game 5 because of how many times did he leave this game with like, uh-oh, the hamstring is acting up here. He's shooting 21% since returning from injury in the series. He scored 6 points.
Yeah.
He hasn't hit a three. He's got 5 turnovers to 10 assists. Not all that great. So I'll be sort of shocked if he even plays here in Game 5, and I think that's the right move. I wonder if Spoelstra dusts off Duncan Robinson with what the shooting we just saw in Philly. You said 7-35 in Game 4. They were 7-30 in Game 3, so nobody can hit a three. Duncan Robinson hit 8 threes in a game against the Hawks. Now I know it's the Hawks, and you're playing a better defensive team in Philly, but you maybe give him a go here. Like, give him a spell, because we've barely seen him really since.
Yeah. I'd
be sort of shocked if he doesn't at least try him for a stretch.
And that Heat culture is like, all right, now it is your chance. We need someone out there like that because they're not getting... I mean, Oladipo, his numbers are okay in the end here, but I didn't think he had a really strong impact on the game there last night. But he may be the one who comes into the starting lineup if Lowry is out. And then, you throw Robinson out there pretty early to just try to generate some fresh looks and a guy who you know can light up, because he went 8-for-9 in that game, which is just a strength, again, that the Miami Heat have, that a guy like that can't even play because he was so bad. But when things are going wrong like this, they need to find a way to ignite that offense, because it is crazy to see just how bad it was, those threes. I mean,
this is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league, if not the best, in terms of percentage-wise. So it's really weird for back-to-back games to only hit 7 on 30-plus attempts. So I don't know. Maybe there's a spot there for Duncan. I wouldn't be shocked if Spoelstra tries it, looking for answers here. Mm-hmm. But Embiid, too, back to him. You know, it was like... They were doing they did a different defensive tactic against him, and from 3 to 4, right? He was like, they were going sort of small, and or getting switches, and you know, he was sort of working or operating in Game 3 a little bit more. They threw more bodies at Game 4, opened things up for everybody else on the Philly team and Harden cooking. But his impact really is just defensively, just him being there. It's just like everybody that goes in there on Miami now you got to think twice. A lot more about Embiid being around the rim than you do, obviously, a Paul Reed or a DeAndre Jordan or whoever the hell, and Niang. I mean, it's just like that impact, him just giving you the minutes on the defensive end, even if he didn't do anything offensively, it's a game changer. This is why it's a little different this Game 5 going back to Miami. It's like, oh, yeah, they didn't have Embiid for the first two. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, Philly fans got to be feeling confident they can win this series. If he's playing, he's still figuring out the mask, and he's bothering with that every feels like minute.
Yeah, well, and you saw there was a play the Sixers tweeted about him basically shutting down Oladipo on a play.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's the sort of thing that you want from your leader, who's like, this. Look at me trying to not get beaten by this guy and just a normal play during the game. That shows the other guys what the intensity has to be on the defensive end. So I think it's great. And as I say, I mean, only took 13 shots yesterday, which is remarkable, really. But the big question for me is, what James Harden is going to turn up in Miami, really? I mean, is it going to be the guy who's in that fourth quarter? I think he had 14 in the end there last
16,
night. 16, yep. Was it? Yeah. Or is it going to be the guy who's just kind of placid and like just not really feeling it? Because if they get game 4 James Harden, then that's, I think, their biggest key to getting a victory and stealing the series.
It was pretty cool seeing Joel Embiid wanting to guard Jimmy Butler.
In
that stretch, because Jimmy was going off. Embiid always takes the better guy or the best guy on the other side of the floor, whether it's a perimeter player or not. And Jimmy was up for it as well, going into the post, you know, footwork, not trying to go through Embiid, but trying to, you know, dance around him. Yeah, guard versus center. Pretty freaking neat to watch that. But the Heat, didn't have that balance in Game 4, where their best player was trying to do everything and obviously knew that no one else was producing, so he had to do it. Mm-hmm. James Harden also was watching Joel Embiid having to do everything, and so he stepped up on the offensive end and was able to create, hit some shots. You saw a motion from James Harden, which you don't see these days. he was into it. It was obviously his best playoff moment in a Philadelphia 76ers uniform. And the people don't want to believe, and I get it. Watching him and seeing what he's done these first couple series doesn't look like the old James Harden. He looks like a different player, and Doc can keep on saying that, but he's running our offense, he's creating assists, he's creating for others, but it's not enough. It's not enough. He has to be a star in this series, especially with Joel Embiid not being 100%. So we'll see what happens in game five. It is a question if he can carry it over.
Right. It's incredible how quickly things can change a playoff series, though. Again, if you just go back and listen to us talking about both of these series, really, on Friday's show to like where we are now, and it's like, oh my God, anybody could win these.
Well, a part of it, though, as well, is because the Embiid thing was he wasn't officially...
Oh, if Embiid's not playing, then I don't even think they're... Yeah. They're not winning both of those games, I'll tell you that.
But what's crazy to me is the Sixers got fined $50,000 for playing Embiid. We're fining teams now for playing their stars. Devin Booker and the Suns got fined as well.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's just beyond... No, it's
not, because the NBA got in bed with gambling, and that's why we're doing this.
And that's, to me, that just shows, like, that's the stupidest thing, is now you're protecting the gambling side of things. More than, I'm fine with a bit of gamesmanship from teams where, like, if you're Doc Rivers, you're like, maybe he's playing, maybe he's not. I'm not... Why don't I tell Miami beforehand? I want Miami to know at tip-off Joel Embiid's playing, but... This is where the gambling influence is coming in, where the NBA is like, no, we're protecting the gamblers. Stupid. Finding teams for playing their stars?
Well, you got to tell me they're playing in the right amount of time so we can set our lines and we can make our bets in confidence. Yeah. I know.
Because, you know, we've seen in the past where, you know, when David Stern, of course, with the Spurs, he fined them for not playing on a national TV. Okay, there's not much you can do, but now you're playing this runner-up MVP, that's 50 grand for not telling us in time, man. That's just stupid. So, bad.
You were going to say something.
Well,
about
it was, so the start was 7 Eastern on Friday night.
Yep.
And they had to report his status. They have to say, the interesting part is all they had to say was bracket doubtful by a certain amount, by I think it was 1:30 or 2 o'clock Eastern. It was early because I was at my naturalization ceremony and I was watching. It was somewhere around there. It was 1 or 1:30. It had to be reported. I think it was by 1 Eastern that they just had to report something and they weren't going to report out. All they had to say was doubtful. That's all they had to say. Not that he was going to play, and that's where they were fined $50,000.
That's weird.
And then they have to do it again at, I think, 60 minutes before tip-off. But yeah,
gotta protect the game.
I don't know. Yeah.
Got it, man. Yeah. I thought it smelled more American in here today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So,
thanks. Smell like a hot dog.
Dual citizenship. Look out, Lee. This guy's got multiple passports.
Yeah. So which one did you give up? The Greece or the Canadian passport?
I'm not like you. I'm not like you. Come on. I'm keeping them all.
All right. Well, let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about Ja Morant's injury and the impact that has on that series. Talk a little Celtics Bucks. The Kings got a new coach, so we got lots more. Don't go anywhere.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, that would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear. You know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone?
Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay.
All right, only two ads. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had two off the top, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Ja Morant expected to miss game four tonight versus the Warriors with the knee injury. I think he is doubtful.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting the, betters know. All right?
You never know.
Okay.
You never know. Doubtful is better than out.
Better than out. But, yeah, this obviously sucks. This you know, a part of it, I guess, from the pool grabbing at the loose ball, grabs the knee. Ja Morant pissed off over on the sideline. You broke the code. Mm. Then I'm going to delete that tweet. Mm. I'm not sure did you really break it. But then there's other clips of him landing awkwardly. He had a knee injury, too. So it seems like he re-aggravated this.
Right.
This blows, though.
It obviously does stink. Why did he delete the tweet? Do we have a confirmation as to why? Because it just seems a little less of a strong opinion, a little less poignant. If you just point, you just pull it out.
I think I took it as in reference to like Dylan Brooks was a dirty play. Yeah. I don't think anyone could contest that. I don't think what Jordan Poole did was dirty.
Right. No, and it was not dirty.
And I think Ja Morant sort of reacted emotionally, like
caught
he
up
broke
in
the code
of the moment,
and then he was like, probably a bit harsh, and it was harsh because it was just. I look at what Poole did, like, you know, when you're playing defense and sometimes you throw your leg out and you just kick the ball, it's a kickball. Ja Morant's herky-jerky. Poole sort of, you know, lost him and reached out and just grabbed him, and that was it. I didn't see anything malicious or anything like that. And I think Ja Morant, once he sort of cooled down a bit, was like, probably didn't do that on purpose. Because why would anyone really do something like that?
Seems like a strange decision in a split second
exactly
to determine while I'm doubling and going for a loose ball in a key game in a playoff series that I'm going to try and injure you by grabbing your knee.
Yeah.
That's just, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what he was doing at all. It happens.
Absolutely.
Stupid injuries happen in basketball all the time.
It would have been incredible if he had that type of surgical precision in the moment.
Yeah, and the strength, really.
Yeah, Klay Thompson, great comment. I don't even think he's strong enough to affect somebody's knee. Awesome.
Wow, did Klay just break the code about his own teammate and say he's not strong enough?
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, I think he's basically saying, get in the weight room, Jordan Poole. Klay, there's no satire with that guy. I think he says, but, I mean, he gave him a hip opener. You know, you kind of grabbed the knee, pushed on the waist, and everybody watching in slow-mo and watching that half a second, instead of watching the whole clip where a second earlier he poked the ball loose. Didn't get absolutely loose or clearly loose, so he went after it again, got a knee. And yeah, in that moment, if you're slowing it down, I know you talked about it on your Weekend Shift podcast. It looks bad, but that's not how it works. That's not how real life works. And so, he went after it. There were a lot of moments where Ja Morant, playing with an injury early in the third quarter, flew out at Klay and hit his knee on Klay on a closeout attempt, and then he kind of landed awkwardly 90 seconds before this pool incident. So I think he also retracted that tweet, because of everything going on with Poole, but also because they gave up 142 stinking points to the Warriors, and that's hard to sort of defend after the fact. They lost by 30.
Yeah.
The Golden State Warriors looked incredible. They look like the best version that we've seen this postseason, the way they're moving it around. So I think Ja was a little bit, you just got popped. And they did an incredible job of taking away Ja Morant. They didn't double, which we thought they may have after a 47-point performance. They kind of stopped him with the zone. They played so much zone. I don't know what the stats say about how many possessions in a row they played in relation to postseason games in the past. But to see 1-2-2 over and over and over again for like, 2.5 quarters. I don't see that very often. I don't remember seeing that ever. I know we see a box and one in the 2019 finals against Steph, but it was Morant Steph like where they had to focus on Morant and they took away the 3-point shooting, and that was the game right there. And then the Warriors looking great on the offensive end too.
Well, let's say he doesn't play tonight because of the knee injury. Mm. They went, 20-5 without him?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you give the Grizzlies still a chance to tie this series and give us a pivotal game five? Or without Ja, and he's played great for the most part, that they don't have a chance to to win this one tonight.
They're a chance, but a slim chance, I would say. The Warriors just unlocked something there. And that's what the fear was going home when they stole game one. It was like they could really just have a game where they shoot 17 for 32. And Clay and Steph look, you know, mostly very good. Steph had 14 free throws in this game. He was just a lot more aggressive.
Oh,
and
they were. It was a layup.
Yeah.
Fest.
And that inside. Now I think if you're the Warriors, they haven't played their best in the first two games. They've got the split and they can sort of smell blood a bit. And I think we know that if we can go 3-1 up, very likely they're going to close out the series from there, whether it's in six or perhaps even five here, especially if Jar is missing. You mentioned the 25. Fantastic, of course, there for Memphis. They've played without him. Dylan Brooks will be back, of course, for game four as well. So they get that. But I think this is where you're going to see experience versus the relative inexperience here of the Grizzlies. Like, they cannot allow the Warriors to get on. They start off, they're up, what, 13 points?
No, they couldn't miss a three.
Yeah, early on. Yeah, yeah. But then it was basically, that was like turned around so quickly. And then the Warriors, just that avalanche again, you know, to put up 142 points, I mean, That's the real concern here for the Grizzlies is how do they sort of get them back to, you know, just missing all these threes when the ball's moving like that, Steph's aggressive, Clay's hitting shots. It's very, very tough to see. For me, Memphis splitting this road, you know, for them, this road stretch.
Yeah, Ja Morant, knee injury. Bane is banged up with sort of back issues. I don't know what's going on with Steven Adams. You know, is he sick or is he not? Is he back? Is he not? Does he even get a chance? Because that's the crazy part here with the Warriors. And I brought this up on the weekend shift. Like, the one thing we thought the Grizzlies were going to do was, like, take care of the rebounding department, and that's, like, what that's their bread and butter, right? We'll get more chances than you will, and that hasn't happened. A lot, in large part, because of Wiggins' great job on the boards and Otto Porter, man, coming in. Otto Porter is, like, a revelation here for the Warriors and Steve Kerr. It's like, I wonder if he starts tonight. And, you know, Kuminga got the game 3 start. Kerr's getting crazy and trying all these different lineups. Will it be Otto Porter? Because when he's played, that's when the Warriors have looked the best, I would say, on both ends.
He has to absolutely start.
Yeah,
I think so. He started the third quarter. He started the second half because Kuminga did some good things, but not a lot of good things. He turned it over a couple times.
Yeah,
but they have a bit of a recipe. The Grizzlies are trying to take away the threes, and that's why it became a bit of a layup line, I think. The thing is, we talk about Morantless Grizzlies and that roster. Well, when Steph sits, it's historically been a problem for the Warriors. Where are we getting our offense? And now with Jordan Poole, they're just – it is – it is Poole or Curry light. I mean, Poole is just...
I can't believe this. I mean, I know now I should be used to it, the Jordan Poole, like 30 points and the way he scores and his playmaking and all that. I feel in shock every time I see it still, because it's like an impersonation of Steph and it's like becoming more and more believable.
Yeah, and he's also showing he's a team player, because he was starting for a while. Now he's coming off the bench and he's like, okay, I'll just do whatever. He understands where he is in the pecking order, but he also understands I can get these shots. He's got the, you know, somewhat of a green light to go out there and score and shoot at will. And he's so confident in his own ability, which at the start of the season, early in the season, was costing him some bad shots. Now he's like, he understands, be a little bit more patient, you'll get the opportunities and go out there. But the Otto Porter stuff for me is just shocking, because he feels like just a throw-in, like end-of-the-bench type of guy. I don't think they start him. I think they do like that, what he's giving them off the bench but certainly when you're Steve Kerr, it's like you've got some very, very good options right now. So yeah, things have just sort of almost like fallen into place perfectly here for the Warriors, where they feel that sort of championship caliber run again, and the Grizzlies a little bit shorthanded obviously tonight, and just not haven't been in a position like this before.
Dylan Brooks needs to make up for his boneheaded foul on Gary Payton's second. He needs to have one of those Dylan Brooks games, which we know he has in him. 25 to 30 points. He's got to have one where he's hitting some threes and being aggressive, and he's going to do that. And like, the Grizzlies should be helped out. They shouldn't give up 142, I don't think. He's good. He's a decent defender. You know, obviously scrappy. He's going to give you all his fouls, but he's on Curry a lot. But he's got to have one of these breakout offensive games and not have the opposite, where we know he can go like 2 for 15, because he'll just keep shooting away.
Yeah, it'll be a different game for the Grizzlies. They're going to do it by committee instead of, you know, waiting for Morant to produce. They shouldn't see a zone like that. So, you know, they should try and produce by committee themselves. The scary part is, the Warriors, when Curry sits, they've won those minutes by 25 points in total over these first three games. And that's all Jordan Poole. And I wasn't completely sure that the quotes coming from him on the floor when he was yelling were accurate. Did you see that? He hit the shot and he said, "Let's go. I'm really him. I'm really him." Would you? That's what it was. And reading some lips, I guess.
That's what was reported. It's like similar to that bowling.
Bowler, yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Yeah.
It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
For sure.
Same vibe to it. That's for sure.
I'm really him, Skeets. He's yelling at you. Yeah. You don't believe that I can do this night in and night out.
I think exactly right. That's what he's yelling at.
I guess. I'm really him. And we talked about it on Friday's Beach Steppin'. We had the great question in our mailbag. Poole, Maxey, or Brunson? Whew. Who you got?
Right. And for the next 10 years. Mm. It wasn't for like right now in a playoff series. It was for the next 10 years.
It was a great, yeah.
That's a good one.
It was a great email. It's a very difficult choice. But Jordan Poole, yeah, balling out there right now.
Let's talk a little Bucks Celtics. Mm. Interested to hear your biggest takeaway from the Game 3 victory there. Crazy ending, of course, with the the smart foul. Was he in his motion? No, they gave him two. I think the league came out and said the officials got it right, that it was on the floor, only shooting the two. That's the the final 2-minute report or whatever. Mm. But what do you think of this one? And then we got John Horse with the Bucks saying the officiating's been basically garbage.
Yeah.
On their side of things, Giannis should be going to the line 100 more times a game.
Well, I'll start with the Marcus Smart one. I think that's wrong. What else was he doing? I mean, he grabbed the ball and he's going up. He's shooting three. He should have gotten three shots out of that.
Wow.
I can't believe...
Really?
I believe that for sure. What else was he doing?
Well, he felt the... Well, I guess you could say he felt the pressure that they were going to do the old foul because they're down three.
Right.
The classic, hey, just foul because just don't give up a three-pointer. And then when was it Drew?
Is
coming towards them. It's smart. He's Lowry-like. He's Chris Paul-like. Yeah. He's thinking 10 steps ahead. Well, I'll just... try and trick the refs.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what people...
And I get the gamesmanship, but I'm like, he was shooting a three. At that point of the game, they need a three. He's shooting. Anyway.
Yeah.
We don't need to go and break down every single foul call because both teams are complaining about every foul every single time. But it feels
in every series.
Exactly.
Like
and
right
it's
now.
Just ridiculous. Like, we have to accept some calls are just going to be controversial and they're not always going to get them right. But me, for Giannis, what I noticed about this for him in this game, he had an incredible 42 points, 12 rebounds, 12 free throws. I think that their strategy was don't get into the sort of muscling, trying to outbody guys in the low post, because that's when the Celtics and actually got some good big bodies in Grant Williams and Al Horford, and even Jaylen Brown could do it. Giannis is better when he can have a bit of a run up and he can sort of do those gigantic steps and finish around the rim. He went 16 for 30 in this game, by far his best shooting performance.
Yep.
And I felt a lot of that was like, he was like, I've got to just attack these guys before they can put their body on me. And I think that was really the key here, because Drew Holiday had a good game. He didn't shoot all that well, but Giannis was just looser and fresher, I think, like that. For the Celtics, overall, again, you lose a game by 2 points on a could have been overtime,
man.
If it was...
That Horford, the first Horford I thought was going in.
Al Horford, by the way, 22 points and 16 rebounds, 4 threes. He is unbelievable. like we know he's been underrated, but my God, he's playing well. But Jason Tatum himself, this is now 2 games where he's kind of struggled a little bit. 4 for 19 on this game in particular. Only 1 rebound as well. And Udoka talked about that afterwards. He's like, if you're not shooting, that's fine. If you, that happens, but you have to still impact games in other ways. And only 3 assists. Now, he gets 4 blocks, but Jason Tatum at his best, what I've seen him this season, is when he's getting rebounds and he's the distributor, facilitator on offense as well. He hasn't been able to do that, certainly in this game here. So this is a fascinating series. The Bucks look like they were in control of this one. Boston comes back in and gave themselves a real chance here to steal back home court advantage. But Milwaukee's done it, and now game 4 is just... This is going to be incredible. This one is going to be a battle to the end. You can still convince me either way that the Celtics could win this or the Bucks win it. But I think Giannis, I'll be surprised if he doesn't play that same way, where it's like those run-ups. Just don't let them come out. Don't try to out-muscle these guys, because that's how the Celtics want to defend you.
No, I mean, I think he straight up tricked Grant Williams at the end. The go-ahead basket like, you think I'm going to barrel into you and maybe go for a little hook shot or even try to get to the free throw line? And he just did the crazy little Euro step in tight quarters and then got a kind bounce.
It wasn't a
smooth layup. It got a little drop. And then we had the Drew Holiday stepping on Tatum, and he drops. So that was a bang-bang. He misses that. And then maybe the Celtics do pull this off. Not to say the whole tips and the Marcus Smart miss free throws. Crazy. This has been a wild series already.
It was a wild series. Bucks got a couple rolls there at the end.
Yeah.
If Jason Tatum is a little better, it's a totally different result. I think for one game, Jason Tatum turned into Kevin Durant from round one, where Kevin Durant was sort of rushing stuff. The Celtics got in his head, overpassing, not taking his shots, turning it over, and he just – he got looks, but he just wasn't right for one night. So can he bounce back? Because it sure feels like Giannis isn't going to fall off. We're watching Giannis' finals performance right now, where he has to do so much. Yeah, they decided – you know, you can bring the ball up, so there can't be a lot of traffic around you. The Celtics are really, really good at doing that, or we'll get you loose in different spots. Mike Budenholzer doing an incredible job of varying the offense for Giannis Antetokounmpo, no doubt about that. But I think we're going to see great defensive performances on both sides. It's just going to be about shot making, because we've seen through three games now, you know, the Celtics had it faltered in game one a little bit, but now I think they're all locked in. We're seeing some Eastern Conference basketball. Yeah. We're seeing great defenses. And if Tatum can pick it up a little bit, then the Celtics, have a real, real shot here, because besides Giannis, you got to rely on Holiday to create there, and that's
who's being aggressive though.
Yeah, he shot 30 times.
Drew Holiday shot 30 times. I think that's worth noting again. Scored 25. Definitely not efficient.
No,
but I think they need that aggression when there's no Middleton, and he shot at least 20 times in all three games so far.
Yeah,
That secondary scoring key to them.
Yeah.
With no Middleton.
Well, he's the only one who can really get his own shot, too. Those other guys need to be set up. So he needs to be aggressive like that. And, you take the 25 points on the 30 shot simply because he has to force that offense and create that, make that defense work on him as well. Giannis can't create for him as well as trying to create for everybody else.
I can't wait for this game.
Sure, yeah.
This one is tonight.
No more referee talk, please, God.
I know.
So much referee talk.
Because people are putting clips up. You know, Giannis, the one on Robert Williams.
Yeah.
He was fouled before that. Like, I get it. We get it. Like, things aren't always going to be perfect. But, like, the Celtics lose this game, but they took 34 free throws. So, you know, what are they complaining about? They got tons of free throws.
They are complaining about the one they didn't get at
right.
the end.
And that's what it comes down to. But it's like, you've got to just, like, the game isn't perfect. The referees aren't perfect. That's the way it goes. A great physical series like this, there's always a way you can kind of manipulate it to say, look, this was a foul if you go by the letter of law. But the flow of the game, I think, is way more important than this sort of, like, nonsense of trying to break down every single play, whether it was a right or wrong call.
Marcus Smart might be perfect at intentionally missed free throws, though. That was really well done. He tricked
it
everybody.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he went through his routine. He was going to shoot that second. No, boom. And got there. I mean, he had a chance to tie this game, put it into overtime. Like, a pretty good look, all things considered, in traffic there off of missed free throw. And then Williams coming in, and then Horford getting a couple looks, and that second one a little late. Yeah. You knew it in real time, that second one, I felt like.
Yes.
It was like,
you could hear
don't
it.
I think he got it.
Yeah.
No.
Someone hugged Al Horford.
Yeah,
off the bench. I don't know who that was, actually. But
the guy off the bench.
Yeah. But even Al Horford was.
No. He was like, it was pretty subdued. Yeah. That was a perfect free throw miss. You don't usually see backboard rim because he just went backboard.
Yeah.
Perfect. Usually, you know, he'll try and get a piece of the rim, or he'll loft it up off the back rim or side rim, but he went backboard rim right back to him.
To him.
It was phenomenal. And he kind of faded on the shot. And then, you know, the Horford tip went backboard, left rim. He was standing on the right side. Backboard, left rim, then right rim towards him. You don't usually see a ball go off like that, go off the rim like that. So a lot of stuff happened there. It was wild. I do think the Marcus Smart, just to jump in, there was 4.5 seconds left when he, you know, was in his shooting motion. And if you remember, you know, game one of the first series against the Brooklyn Nets, they used every single second of the game clock to get Tatum that shot. So I don't think he was trying to shoot. I think he was, you know, he felt the contact and then he tried, you know, to throw it up. He didn't even complain all that much. I think if he was trying to shoot, he'd complain a little bit more. But yeah, it's getting a little tiresome, I think, on Twitter a little bit, because it's like peak internet detective at this point. You know, like, even a couple of years ago, not everyone was going through every single play, but now everybody getting their computer skills up
and manipulating the context of it as well. That's the thing. But I'm just looking at it again here. I honestly think that's a bad call in that sense, because Smart's getting it. They need three, and he knows Drew's coming, so he's like, I'm getting the shot up. I just don't see what else they could argue that he was doing other than shooting. So anyway, just my take on it.
I think he was ripping through. He felt Holiday's arm.
I don't see the rip through, to be honest there. I see him like, he knows the contact's coming, and he's like, I'm getting the shot up here because he knows.
And this is what Udoka, of course, was saying. He's like, this was his shooting I mean, exactly, he's going into a shooting motion. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But you're right. Mm. I mean, and this is what happens with all of these.
Right.
Half saying, of course he was shooting. Other half saying, no, he wasn't. He was just trying to get the foul call, as we've seen.
I will say, Drew Holiday being extremely strong and keeping his arm and keeping Smart's arms down, I think played a factor too. Because if you know, is able to go through the arms, it looks more like a shooting motion. But Smart's arms were down for a long time. Hmm. You know what I mean? As he tried to rip through.
So. I forgot to even bring up, just to keep talking about the officiating, was it not said on a broadcast, hey, man, you fall, you'll get the call, basically.
Oh, I don't know.
Our whole thing. Yeah. Oh, God, no. It's all blending together. No,
was it Richard? Was it JJ?
Was it Mark Jones?
Was it Mark Jones?
I can't remember.
Hotter than
it was said at some point this weekend by an official. Basically, yeah, you know, if you fall there, you're getting the call.
By an official.
Yeah.
Udoka said they said that to him.
Yes, well, that's from the official.
Yeah.
Mm. You think he's making it up?
No, I don't.
If you fall, you get the call.
I mean, we were all over this. We're telling everybody, and now everybody's catching on. It's true, and it drives me nuts on rebounds. I mean, I just hate it.
Yeah.
Any contact on a rebound, you're getting called for something. It's silly. That's when they should be allowed to fight. Battling for the boards. It's literally called battle for the boards. Let them battle a little bit. If that means somebody gets hit on the arm, or, you know, I'm not saying you can straight up hit a guy and punch a guy in the face, but there's contact, let them tussle a little bit.
Absolutely. When it's a loose ball like that, you know, again, you can tell someone goes in with his body and tries to whack a guy out of the way, but when it's two arms going up and it's a wrestling contest, there's no foul there.
Right.
Let him play.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to some news here. The Sacramento Kings have their new king. They've hired Mike Brown as the team's new head coach in hopes of breaking the longest playoff drought in NBA history. Can Mike do it? The Kings negotiated a 4-year deal with the current Golden State Warriors assistant coach. So everybody's wondering, well, why Mike Brown? I think there are three reasons why. We've talked about it a little bit when we were wondering if he was going to get this job. The Kings seem to prioritize previous head coaching experience. Mm-hmm. You know, their list was Brown, Mark Jackson, Steve Clifford, all coaches who you know, have some history of obviously coaching in this league before. So there was that. They wanted to go that. Didn't want a new coach. They also seemed to prioritize a defensive-minded coach because they're garbage on that end of the floor. I think they ranked 27th overall in defensive rating, the Kings did. So, again, all three of those that I listed, you know, known for really defensive-minded coaches, and Brown is one of them, and especially what he's done with Golden State. And the other thing is, and I think it was Jason Jones pointing this out on Twitter, Vivek Ranadive, excuse me, he has a fixation on former Warriors coaches. This is four former Warriors assistant coaches that have now become Kings head coaches since 2013. Michael Malone, Luke Walton, Elvin Gentry, and now Mike Brown. So those are probably the three things. I think this is actually a decent hire. Tass, you said it, though, last week. Who really knows? I mean, you can just say you like what you've seen from that coach before. I mean, you don't got LeBron James on your team.
Yeah,
you're not going to the finals like you did way back in the day with the young LeBron. But I think at least in terms of a structure, especially a defensive-minded guy, and I think basically Fox was pleading for that at the end of this year, if you heard some of his like postseason quotes. Like, we need someone to like run this, like some actual accountability. So maybe that starts with Mike Brown.
Maybe you just need players who can play defense as well. I mean, ultimately that's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter who the coach is, if you don't have defensive players out there. You know, they made the trade for Sabonis, not a great defender himself. Fox obviously needs to be better. Barnes, all these guys. I mean, I'm just naming guys now. Davion Mitchell, very good defender.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. The challenge for Mike Brown is just to somehow unlock these guys so they can really stop just conceding baskets so easily from three-point line and in the paint. So he's got a ton of work to do, but this roster also needs to improve. I don't really see tons of defensive stoppers there. So exactly how they're going to do that, again, Monty McNair's got his work cut out for him, but I think Mike Brown is a respected, trusted voice who has been around a long time. He's been an assistant for 6 years there with the Warriors, so he certainly is ready for another opportunity. I hope he succeeds, but you know, as of today, a coach isn't going to turn this team around from where they were to all of a sudden vaulting up the standings without some improvement in the personnel as well.
Yeah, he becomes the Kings' 12th coach in the past 16 seasons. I'd love to see him get a year or two, you know, to actually implement some sort of system in place of what they're going to run. Don't give it, you know, a couple months or even just a season. You got to give them a couple seasons here, I think.
He better. And I kind of was in his corner because he kind of got screwed with the Lakers draw back in the Pau Gasol, Kobe, Nash, Dwight Howard experiment. But the criticisms of his are, well, he doesn't really adapt in the playoffs. Well, if they make the playoffs, Mike Brown's getting a banner.
They
need to get there. So if he can develop a system, which he's obviously capable of doing, he's been around this game for a long time. So good luck to him.
And the Kings, here's what they need to do. Don't come into next season, be it from your GM or your man or your owner or whatever, and say, you know, it's playoffs or bust. Don't do that. Why don't you set your goals a little bit even lower? I know that's crazy because it feels like every team makes the playoffs. But look at the Western Conference standings, and like, we don't need to go through every team. Some crazy things would have to happen for even the Kings to make the play-in. That's just being truthful. And again, I want all your Fox stock. I'm in on Sabonis. I like Mike Brown as a head coach. But like, why don't you just set your goals as like, let's be above average defensively. You know, let's start that. Even if it translates into, you know, 35, 38 wins or whatever. Like, just like, let's get a system in place. Obviously, we got some decisions to make. Monty McNair does in terms of their personnel, and they'll have money and they have a pick they got to try to knock out of the park here. Mm-hmm. But just like, don't do that. Don't put yourself in that corner right away. I'd like to see them do that. And I think give it a year or two, or, you know, really, I guess I'm getting 2 or 3 years under Mike Brown. And maybe then you're like suddenly challenging and you're at least a plus 500 team.
Stability is important.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But we'll see. And sorry, one more thing. I heard Deuce and Mo talk about this on their Great Kings podcast. It will be nice, I think, for Mike Brown to be able to come in. He's worked under Pop, so he's worked with like incredible players, obviously, in the Spurs franchise. You just said with the Warriors, so he's around Steph Curry. He's been around, you know, Kobe's and stuff like that, and LeBron with the Cavs. He should be able to say, like, to Fox and Sabonis, the stars on the team, like, this is what these guys did.
Right.
This is how they approached the game.
Yeah.
You know, I've been around it day to day. You know, not that Fox and Sabonis are going to be on the levels of LeBron's and Duncan and stuff like that, but, like, if they can do it, you can implement that too to become a better player, and hopefully he can, you know, they should listen to that. I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah, and just looking at their recent draft history as well, because you talk about that, that's so important because Mitchell was their pick last year. Yeah. He's turned out. They had the Portuguese player, Keta, as well, you know, whatever. But before that was Tyrese Haliburton, which they traded, you know. Yeah. So they've actually drafted in the last couple of years here some okay players, but now it's important to grow those players. And Haliburton wanted to be there. He wanted to stay. Okay, fine. He's moved on now. But it's going to be – for the best thing as well, I think, for Mike Brown is to try to get just some stability in terms of the internal dramas and chaos. Get rid of all those as best you can. Because that tends to also engulf the franchise early on. There's reports of, you know, someone not talking to somebody, and, you know, the sort of leaks that come out of that locker room and that organization are never good either. And Mike Brown, I think if he can just say, look, I'm the coach, leave me alone, I'll take care of the players.
Right.
That's important, I think, for the Kings.
All right, well, let's hear from everybody out there in the stream team. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Mike Brown getting that Kings job? And does this mean Mark Jackson's going to be coaching the Lakers fast? That's what, you know, I guess everybody else wants. I don't know.
No idea. The thing is, Mark Jackson was trending on Twitter today because he didn't get a job.
Right.
Twitter's a strange place.
Wow.
What about MB? Mike Brown, he should be trending.
Well, I think, again, I think it's the Lakers angle of things.
Yeah,
I know. Lakers fans than Kings fans.
I know.
Everybody weighing in on Mark Jackson, getting his name trending there on Twitter. We'll see, because now we're down to, well, we got the Lakers still, we got the Hornets.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's all right now.
Right now. Yeah, Jazz, TBD.
Yeah.
And you never know with a couple other franchises.
Yeah.
Congrats to Mike Brown. Congrats to the Kings fans. Starts now. The playoff push. But not for this season coming up. The next season starts now. Let's take our final break. When we come back, tweet of the night.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at Fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right. Let's start wrapping up the show with a little tweet of the night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, tweet of the night. It's really a pick from Drew, who tagged us in this tweet. So thank you, Drew. And I believe Corliss Williamson, which was a little strange. But wow, Phoenix blew the Mavericks TF out, I guess. And then the photo, for those listening to the podcast, was the error that they had during the broadcast where it showed the Suns with 7,778 points to the Mavericks 82. Mm. Okay, that it happens. Yeah. You know, it happens. Yeah. We've been in the truck before. Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
Fat fingered that one. Well, get it off the screen. Somebody fix it. But this photo really caught my eye because I was like, oh my God, that's a Super Nintendo.
Wow.
Yeah, Drew, you're rocking the Super Nintendo. You see the controllers there too? Anyway, it just made me think of my favorite Super Nintendo games, and if you guys had one, or if you ever even played that system, Lee, I wasn't sure.
Yes. Okay. Someone had it, yeah.
Who had it? Tinny? Tinny Tindan? The man that invented Fast in his jeans.
I mean, Atari was obviously the biggest one there in Sunbury.
Showing your age.
Yeah, for my generation. But Double Dragon was on the Nintendo, wasn't it?
I don't know if they had a Super Nintendo version, but.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was on the Mega Drive that they had the Double Dragon.
Sounds right. Yeah. I only remember
Double Mega Drive.
Sega Mega Drive.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't get that?
Yeah, we had.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't think you ever played Super
regular
Nintendo.
Sega was
Mortal Kombat and the what's the other one? Street Fighter. Yeah,
oh, you're a big like, fighting game.
Yeah, those ones are great. But still, of sort of those games from that era, Double Dragon still is my favorite. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, did you play Super Nintendo?
Oh, yeah.
All right,
it
you got a favorite?
It was my second system.
Oh, it was?
I never had the Sega Mega Drive. I was a Nintendo man.
Yeah, I was a Sega man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the regular... Hold on. Original Sega is called the Mega Drive? Just
no,
the original?
That was like a different version. Souped-up version.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, just wanted to confirm.
I was a straight-up Sega Genesis, three buttons, let's play some ice hockey.
Oh, we would battle. We would battle. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't like your house.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't like the controller.
And it's a fat controller.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a different controller.
But, you know, NHL 94 and 95 are pretty good on the Genesis.
Damn right. That's why I was a Sega man, because I believe the sports games were better on that system.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, you could argue with me, but anyway, what was your favorite
Well, speaking of sports games, I love Super Tennis. That was a good game.
Wow.
That was a really good game.
Wow.
That was probably my go-to sports game, I guess.
Really?
I love the NHL games were.
Yeah.
Get me in the corners. I can wrap around anybody. One time that baby. When they added the one timer, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think my favorite game on the Super Nintendo was the original game that everybody got, the Super Mario World.
That's just a damn good game.
It was a really good game.
Yep.
Just everybody had it when it came with the system. I think everybody got it.
Yeah, it was something like that. I feel there was a package deal. Metroid was amazing. NBA Jam, you could play.
Oh yeah. Jam was on it. Yeah.
Super Mario World. F-Zero, you remember that game?
Yeah. I have
great
it written
racing
down.
Game. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else you got?
That's about it.
Yeah.
The Super Mario World is just the first time you turn it on, it's like, whoa,
wow,
graphics. You know. So as soon as you got the Super Nintendo, you open that thing, then you put in the first game you got, and it was out of this world. And compared to Nintendo or regular Sega,
vibrant.
Yeah, it was pretty good. So yeah, I wasn't into the fighting games.
Yeah.
Much.
I wasn't as much either. JD. Did you have a Super Nintendo game? Were you a Super Nintendo? Were you a Nintendo family?
No. Well, guys, you're talking like 91, 92. Yeah, I was breaking in some Helixes back then. I wasn't wasn't playing the video games. I had Intellivision. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
And then I had, that was nothing until 64. Nintendo 64. Yeah.
Did you have the fast load on the 64? That was
Well,
like everyone had the Commodore 64. Well, not everyone. A couple of kids had it, and then someone had this fast load disc where you would load that.
Oh, you're talking.
N64.
Yeah, not the Commodore.
Okay.
What's Commodore 64. So it was like you basically had to be a programmer to get a game up, and it loaded, and it took like half an hour. So if you wanted to play video games. Games in the mid 80s in Australia, it was like, we want to play, we'll play in an hour once we get everything set up.
Wow.
and then it would go crazy, and then the fast load came along. It was game changer.
Wow.
10 minutes and we were playing.
Alright, see, Drew, this is what happens. This is what goes on when you just send in a simple tweet with an error on the score bug there. Let's hear from everybody out there though. Best Super Nintendo game. There must have been a Mario Kart on Super Nintendo.
There was.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that would be on the short list too.
So in the production truck there, I guess, you know, those long hours in TV.
Yeah.
They got it all set up. TV, we're good to go. The game's going to happen. We'll produce it fine, but then they jump on and play some video games in between, I guess.
No.
Oh, that was somebody's house. Got me.
I couldn't tell if you were kidding.
Well, right? I didn't know. I'm sure they have time to play video
Drew
games.
Made the air. I do love the idea of them in the production truck, though, playing Super Nintendo.
Yeah, that's what I don't know. It seemed like a messy house. No offense, Drew. But it seemed like a production truck.
Well, you can see there's a PlayStation over in the corner. There's a funny little doll there.
That's...
Is that a Paddington Bear?
Yeah, well, like a dog though, isn't
it? It's a dog, it's not a bear. Yeah.
Okay.
Then that's a PlayStation underneath the Super Nintendo, and that's a slider for the Switch. See that slider beside the Nintendo?
Oh, you're right. Jeez. Good eye test.
Yeah, you got me thinking about the score bug, and that's why I thought we were in a truck. Mm. But I guess not. Yeah, I could see NASCAR playing on that Super Nintendo.
Oh, that's just not NASCAR would for sure. Yeah. Who's NASCAR test?
Nobody's
a
friend.
Yeah.
It's our old TD, one of our TDs from back in the
day. What's a TD for those people?
It's a technical director, the person who's doing the shit that I'm doing over here.
Are you playing Super Nintendo over there the entire show? No wonder we have
That's
some errors.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Tonight's games, guys. Celtics Bucks. Milwaukee leads that series 2-1, followed by Grizzlies Warriors. Warriors obviously up 2-1 in that. Stop playing Super Nintendo. So, yeah, see?
Oh, there you go.
See? Playing Super Mario World or whatever you're doing.
Galaga.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, Gallagher, great.
John Gallagher.
There's the games. Of course, we had to show you this image.
It took me a long time to get this downloaded from NBA Twitter.
Predictions, Lee? Come on. What do you got
tonight? Home team, I think.
Wow.
I like the Bucks. I think Giannis is going to put on another show, and you don't really see the Grizzlies stealing this one. I think the Warriors are like, let's end this, well, not end it, but, you know, put us in a position to end this series.
It'd be tough if these are 3-1 series for anyone to convince themselves that the Celtics or the Grizzlies would come back from that. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think the Bucks-Celtics, it's a coin flip.
Yep.
It's hard not to watch the Warriors as podcasters, you know, people who like to write the narratives, write the stories, and not think the Warriors found themselves here in round number 2 against the Grizzlies like they did in 2015. It's obviously not apples to apples, but you remember in 2015, they were down 2-1 to that Grizzlies team. And obviously, this is a bit of a different scenario, but that's when they found themselves.
That was the Tony Allen, Andrew Bogut move. Mm-hmm. It was like, all right, grindfather, you can shoot.
I'm not so sure about the Bucks winning tonight. And I say that as someone who has Bucks in 6, too. Tatum, he has bounced back from bad performances before. There could be a 40-burger or a 50-burger from that guy, for sure. And Grizzlies Warriors, with no Ja Morant, I do not like their chances. Need the Canadian boys to come through if there is no Ja Morant. Dylan Brooks, got to be big on both ends. Brandon Clark, too, has to have one of his monster games and do some work on the boards and get some more shots for that team, because the Warriors are just out-rebounding them right now. So hopefully they're entertaining games. We'll be back to talk about them regardless, whether they're blowouts or one-point victories, tomorrow morning here from the Classic Factory, live at 10 a.m. Eastern. Hit that like button, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, send in your questions to nodunks@theathletic.com, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, @NoDunksInc, and if you don't have an Athletic subscription, what are you doing? Go to theathletic.com/NoDunks so they know that we sent you, so you can take advantage of an incredible Athletic subscription deal right now. I think it's $1 a month still.
Mm.
Oh my God. So go get one if you haven't got one already.
Yeah, where I take my boys for the dentist, they have Gulliger on the old, actual proper arcade game.
Oh, wow.
We're always an hour early for the appointments. No, we've got to get there, kids. We've got to get there. Don't want to be late.
Wow.
Is it a tabletop or?
No, it's in but they've got Donkey Kong and.
Donkey Kong. That was on Super Nintendo.
Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, everything there. Second it's one. Like, yeah, it's awesome. Just wanted to throw that out because JD said Gulliger. It's probably still my favorite arcade game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's an awesome game.
It's your favorite game, not mine. All right, guys. We will see you tomorrow. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, you know the character in Donkey Kong? You know why he didn't have hair or a mouth? He had a mustache and he had a hat.
No, I don't know why.
Because the graphics couldn't produce. They couldn't make a hair and they couldn't make a mouth back then. Wow. I mean, that's just a little factoid for you.
What about Donkey Kong 2? Did they upgrade by then?
I don't know.
It's just a good old fact.
He had a hat and never moved his mouth. He just had a huge mustache.
You say character, but is that not Mario?
Yeah, I didn't say Mario because I wasn't 100% sure, but it has to be, right?
I think it is Mario.
Yeah, I think it is. It looks like Mario.
You're talking about the original Donkey Kong now.
Yeah, because
I got you. It's definitely Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was before Mario.
Mario moved on.
Mario Bros.
He wanted to
the same character, but you know, they weren't calling him Mario.
No,
he was nameless.
Really? I think they were calling him Mario.
Yeah?
I mean, he even had a job. He was a plumber. That's why there's pipes and stuff everywhere.
Mm.
Did you have that old flip screen like handheld thing? The very first one?
No, definitely not.
Wow, they were huge.
Sure were.
You want to talk about Pong real quick?
Commodore 64. You thought we were talking about Commodore 64.
This guy's all over the map, man. I can't even keep track with what system you're even talking about.
This is the thing. Yeah, this. Well, it's no good. I can't show anybody. But these old flip games we used to have, man, they were huge.
Like Tiger. Well, I remember the Tiger handheld games.
Yeah.
Tiger Electronics.
Oh man, they're only $100 on eBay.
Oh Jesus! Get one. Bring it into the show. If we get a blowout tonight, we'll just play video games on tomorrow's show.
I see an N64 controller right there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's
literally
go play.
Right. That's fat. That's a fat controller, but it was nice to handle. The Genesis is too wide. It's like a steering wheel.
Baby hands? What
no, I love the N64's got more buttons, more advanced. Nintendo is just, it just destroys
Super Nintendo
Sega.
Had the nice L&R's. Top triggers. Yeah, L&R's are nice.
That one's got a C-pad. Fly around.
Race the name, people!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.